Good morning. The Bible reading this morning is Psalm 19, and you can find it in the Black Pew Bibles on page 541. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they display knowledge. There is no speech or language where their voices is not heard. Their voice goes out into all the earth, their words to the end of the world. In the heavens he has pitched a tent for the sun, which is like a bridegroom coming forth from his pavilion, like a champion rejoicing to run his course. It rises at one end of the heavens and makes its circuit to the other. Nothing is hidden from its heat. The law of the Lord is perfect, reviving the soul. The statutes of the Lord are trustworthy, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, giving joy to the heart. The commands of the Lord are radiant, giving light to the eyes. The fear of the Lord is pure, enduring forever. The ordinances of the Lord are sure and altogether righteous. They are more precious than gold, than much pure gold. They are sweeter than honey from the comb. By them is your servant warned. In keeping them there is great reward. Who can discern his errors? Forgive my hidden faults. Keep your servant also from willful sins. May they not rule over me. Then will I be blameless, innocent of great transgression. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer.
Good morning, 10 o'clock. Great to be with you all this morning. If you're new, my name is Keith. I'm one of the ministers here, and it's great to have you with us this morning. You go through different seasons in family life where you can do certain things together as a family, and the season that we're in at the moment in our family, one of the things we like doing together is watching game shows. It's fun for all of us for all sorts of different reasons. But the one that's grabbed everyone at the moment is Family Feud. You know, that's one, it's been on TV three times now. We surveyed 100 people and we got the top answers to the questions. And some of the answers you think, what? Who answered that? I mean, seriously. But I mention that because that is like our approach to preaching in these last few weeks. We had a break last week for Father's Day. But apart from that, we have been in a series looking at the big issues. We're looking at the top issues that are obstacles to people coming to faith in Jesus. And when we came up with the list, we didn't just sit around a table and say, oh, I don't know, what do you reckon are the big issues? I don't know, let's have a stab in the dark. We didn't do that. We based this series on research done by McCrindle Research into Australian communities, an Australian survey done in the last couple of years. In other words, we looked at what the survey said, and we took the top answers, and we built a series out of it. Now, the survey said that science was one of the factors that block people from Christianity. Now, I must admit, I am not a scientist by training. My training is in history, theology, and putting the toilet seat down. So I needed to dig around a little bit on this question. My formal scientific training ended in high school with dissecting rats and putting your hand on that generator thing, making your hair all stick up. Anyone else do that? Okay, that's my science training. But I have done some digging, and what I've found is fascinating. So what I hope to do this morning is look at two reasons why this is an objection, why people say science is an objection, and then look at some answers to those objections. Why do people say that science is a blocker to their belief in Jesus? Two reasons. Number one, People say, well, I can't come to faith in Jesus because science and religion aren't compatible. Science and religion aren't compatible, they say. Some people say that science is about truth and facts, whereas Christianity is about myth and guesswork and faith. They say you can't agree with science and a modern way of thinking and still subscribe to anything that talks about faith. Well, there are three responses to that objection based on that kind of thinking. The first response is to say, is to recognize that lots of science is aiming at truth, but never claims to have arrived at it. Lots of science is aiming at truth, but never doesn't claim to have arrived at it. At my last church, I had a friend who was an astrophysicist, literally. A PhD in all this, headed up a team for the CSIRO, looking through the telescope over there near Ryde. Now, one day I asked him what he did for a job. And he said, well, look, Keith, it's like this. What I do is I look at things through telescopes. I come up with theories to explain the things that I've seen in the telescopes. And then the next day I go in and I look to disprove the theory that I came up with yesterday about the things that I see in telescopes. I said, seriously? He said, yep, that's what I do. And that is so much of science. It's about paradigms, it's about testing the paradigms, and it's about shifting when you find that the paradigm no longer is the best explanation of the data. Now, when people say, look, science doesn't fit with God, my guess is that they think that all of science is like water boils at 100 degrees. That's a fact that we can do over and over again. Although someone, when I preached this at 8, said, no, it depends on where you are at sea level. I said, okay, fair enough. That's the thing, right? Science is not all like that. It's not all a fact that you can come at over and over and over again. Lots of science is aiming at truth, but would never claim to have arrived at it. A scientist will tell you, well, what we think at the moment about this thing is, dot, dot, dot. That's the first thing to notice to answer to that objection. The second thing is this: there are more roads to truth than just science. There are more roads to truth than just science. Science cannot tell you whether the dismissal happened in 1975. My guess is here that no one here doubts that that happened. And that's good because it did happen. It's true. That's a fact. But science can't tell you that. Science cannot tell you whether your spouse or your child really loves you. Gentlemen, if you're married, the next time your wife asks you if you really love her, don't get out the specimen jar and say, well, we'll just send this to the lab and we'll find out 24 hours later. Don't try that. That's not going to work for you on all sorts of levels, okay? Science cannot comment on the back and forth of human culture, like music or poetry or painting or any of the arts can. Yet all of those things convey truth to us and point us towards truth. It's important to see this. There are more roads to truth than just science. Now, I think Christianity fits very well with science, as I'm about to show you a little bit later. But it's important to see that Christianity's truth claim does not rest solely on things that lie within the realm of scientific method. Christianity's truth claim includes things like history and personal testimony and experience and overall explanatory power for the data of human life. There are more roads to truth than just science. And the third response to this first objection, that science and religion aren't compatible, is that there seem to be lots of scientists who don't think that. There seem to be lots of scientists who don't think that science and Christianity are incompatible. I went to Bible college with a bunch of people who are way, way smarter than me. There was one guy in my year who had a PhD in electron microscopy. You know how long it took me to be able to say that word? Electron microscopy. He taught that at Sydney University. Another guy there had a PhD in pure mathematics. I asked him what it was, what that meant once, and he explained it to me, and I still didn't understand. And I said to him, look, my idea of pure mathematics is when the number on my team's side of the scoreboard is higher than the number on the other team's. And I said, that's about as pure as it gets, right? There was another guy in the year ahead of me who had a PhD in the medical field. Now, all of those scientifically trained people had no issues with science and a relationship with Jesus. At my last church, there were a bunch of scientists. There was one lady there who was literally a rocket scientist. Literally, right? My first ever sermon there, I said something like, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to work that out. And she came up to me afterwards and she said, no, you don't, but it doesn't hurt. There was another guy there who was the emeritus professor of geology at Macquarie University. Another guy was this astrophysicist I mentioned who was so bright that he won a scholarship to be brought over from England to work for the Australian government to look here, looking in our telescopes. All of those people had no issues with science and a relationship with Jesus. And at the top elite level, there are scientists who are Christians. Alistair McGrath at Oxford University. Simon Conway Morris, the professor of evolutionary paleobiology at Cambridge. I practice to say that too. Francis Collins, head of the Human Genome Project in the US. All of these and many, many more Nobel Prize-winning scientists have no problem seeing their scientific training and their relationship with Jesus as compatible. Now, it shouldn't be a surprise that many find science and Christianity are compatible when you see what science really is. According to the Oxford Dictionary, science is the intellectual and practical activity encompassing the systematic study of the structure and behavior of the physical and natural world through observation and experiment. Notice what it says. It's the study of the physical and natural world through observation and experiment. Notice what it doesn't say. It doesn't say the study of those things with the belief that those things are all that there is. You get that? It's the study of the natural and physical world through observation and experiment. Science itself does not include within its definition the study of the natural world with the belief that the natural world is all that there is. And that highlights for us where some of the conflict lies. You see, science as a discipline doesn't require you to believe one thing or another. It's simply a way of looking at the world and trying to understand it. And so a Christian can quite happily be a scientist and a very good and respected one. The conflict arises when people want to use science as a tool to say that this world is and must be all that there is. That the natural world, that material, that matter, is all that there is. That is actually a worldview called naturalism. That is a worldview called naturalism that lies on a bedrock of faith, of trust, of belief that the material world is all that there is. That is where people like Mr. Dawkins, who we see in the media, land. They assume that because science can tell us so much about the natural world, then the natural world is all that there is for us to know about. But science itself doesn't necessitate that you believe that. As I said, there are lots and lots of Christians who are scientists, won Nobel Prizes, contributed to the ongoing scientific body of knowledge. So, the idea that you shouldn't believe in Christianity if you think science has something positive to say is just false. That objection just doesn't hold any water. But I think there's another reason why science is mentioned as an obstacle to believing in Christianity. And that is this. Some people say, well, look, science has explained the origin of the world, and so we don't need a creator anymore. We don't have to come up with a supernatural explanation for the beginning of things. So actually, we don't need God at all. Science has explained where we've come from, so we don't really need God. It's the idea, if you can explain where we come from using science, we don't have to have any narrative that says we're created, and therefore we're not accountable to anyone else. We're not accountable to a God who might have made us. And I think that in most people's minds, it goes something like this. They go, look, evolution, that's a kind of fixed and accepted concept, right? The newspapers, the news, they tend to talk about that. So evolution is right. And I've heard something about a Big Bang. And so you put those two together. The Big Bang started it, evolution continued it, and here we are. And so there you go. We don't need any other explanation. We don't need God. At least that's my experience in speaking with people. That tends to be how the logic goes. But that's not the case at all. I want to leave aside evolution for a moment, mainly because whether you believe in that or not, I don't think settles things one way or another. There are plenty of Christians who believe that God could have used the process of evolution to bring about where we are up to today. But even if you believe in evolution, you're forced to go backwards. Right? You've got to, the scientists go backwards because they say complex things come from simpler things. So where did it all start? Or with what did it all start? And when they go to those questions, that's where things get very, very interesting indeed. And I owe these points to John Lennox, who's got more degrees than I, you know, than are in our winter. Interesting observations he makes on three levels, gathering together data from lots of different scientists. Number one, proteins. Now, forgive my crude amateur biology, but my understanding is that some of the basic building blocks of life are proteins, right? And so when you're asking the question of where did life come from, you're asking, where did the proteins come from? Right? You're going to go back and back and back till you can get to the most simplest explanation. Now, in the 1950s, they did an experiment, the Miller-Urey experiment, if you want to Google it and look it up later. They tried to guess what might have been the gases and the elements on the most primitive of Earth. Okay, they tried to guess what would have been there. And they put all those things in a chamber and they said, look, there were probably lots of electrical storms right back at the beginning. So we'll add the gases that were on the very primitive Earth to electricity firing it into this chamber and let's see what happens. And after a while, what they got was some sludge, which contains some basic amino acids, which are some of the things that go to making up proteins. And everyone got excited. They go, ha ha, you see? We can explain the origin of life. But then they realized, actually, no. Even if we've got those amino acids, we're still a long, long way from life. Because even if you are able to get all of the amino acids that make up a protein, which they didn't, they still all have to come together in a very specific way in order to make up a protein. Now, I read that and that did my head in. The non-Christian scientist Paul Davies put it like this, which made far more sense to me. He said, making a protein simply by injecting energy is rather like exploding a stick of dynamite under a pile of bricks and expecting it to form a house. You may liberate enough energy to raise the bricks, but without coupling the energy to the bricks in a controlled and ordered way, there's little hope of producing anything other than a chaotic mess. And not only that, 50, 60 years later after that experiment, the mood on that is going, you know what, we probably got the gases that were on, we got that wrong anyway. So that actually doesn't help explain anything. And so from that, they're a long, long way off from determining an exclusively natural process for creating the basic building blocks of life, which are proteins. But let's assume that you could get all the proteins. Let's just assume that we could do that. Brings me to the second interesting point about what science has found about our origin, about life. The reality is that life as we know it requires hundreds of thousands of proteins. And not just randomly thrown together in a pot and shaken around like a martini. Like this life. It doesn't work like that. They have to come together in a very, very specific way and order for there to be life. And the odds of them coming together completely randomly without a design or an intelligence guiding the process, one person figured out the odds were of that happening were 1 in 10 to the 40,000. Now that number's meaningless to you and I. Like what? How many noughts is that? What does that mean? What's that like? It would be like having 2 six-sided dice and rolling a double six 50,000 times in a row. That's the odds. Or, as the mathematician Sir Fred Hoyle put it, he said, the chances of life forming spontaneously are the same as the chances of a tornado sweeping through a junkyard and producing a 747 jet aircraft. The chances of life forming spontaneously with no intelligence to steer the process are 1 in 10 to the power of 40,000. Now, I'm afraid I don't have enough faith to believe in that. But that's not the clincher in my book, actually. The clincher is the third interesting discovery of science into the origin of life, and that is information. Now, we are very clever as the human race. We've managed to put this thing on Mars. You know, this is the Mars rover, which has been trundling around for a while now, picking up soil samples and doing tests on board and beaming back photos and video of what it's found on Mars. Now, let me just ask you for a moment. If this thing sent back pictures of pyramids like the ones they found in Egypt, let's say it found a group of 4 pyramids, all symmetrical, 4-sided, 4 of them right next to each other. If it sent us back a picture of that, what do you think most people would think? Do you think they would think, wow, the wind and the storms have randomly created 4 shapes of exact symmetry right next to each other out of separate pieces? Or would most people think those things seem to have been designed and built by some sort of intelligence, even if we're not sure what that intelligence might be? Because anything we've seen on the earth that looks like that has said someone design it and then build it on purpose. Our experience with building would lead us to that conclusion that there was some intelligence involved. Right? So just keep that in your mind. And here's the thing. In the last 30 years or so, scientists have been discovering more and more about our basic genetic makeup. And they've discovered that our genes are stocked full of information that can be turned on or off like a digital switch. All of that information goes to make up the human body and the way the human body functions. And that is the language that is used in the scientific world. Information. Our basic building blocks have complex information stored in them. Now, in our experience of life, the only time we encounter information is when there's been an intelligence that's designed it. You don't find information kind of out there in the wild. As the biophysicist Dean Kenyon writes, if science is based on experience, then science tells us that the message encoded in DNA must have originated from an intelligent cause. What kind of intelligent agent was it? On its own, science cannot answer this question. It must leave that to religion and philosophy. But that should not prevent science from acknowledging evidences for an intelligent cause origin wherever they may exist. Right, so when biologists go to the very basic blocks of human life, our DNA, they find them filled with incredible complexity. It's the biological equivalent of landing on Mars and finding not just a couple of pyramids, but finding a whole city of Sydney, complete with electricity and Wi-Fi. And some want to see that and say, wow, Look what can happen by random chance. And others want to see that and say, you know what, like Psalm 19 says, the heavens declare the glory of God, and so do the very cells of our body. And so those three interesting discoveries, proteins, life, and the information in our DNA, are all points at which science has not done away with God as our creator at all. In fact, the scientific discoveries made in this area seem to point more and more to the creator's handiwork and beauty and skill. It seems a curious decision to me to stubbornly attribute all of this to blind chance. It seems like a rather non-scientific, non-evidence-based approach to land at that conclusion. Perhaps there's something else driving that approach. The Christian has no problem with science, for we know the one who created and who sustains it. Colossians 1, verse 15, the Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. We know the creator. But not only that, we know that it's the creator who makes the very investigation of science possible. Because science needs a universe that is stable in order to keep making observations that are true today and then true tomorrow and then true the next day. And we know why that is. Why? Jesus before all things, and in him all things hold together. Because he holds it together, it is stable, and science is even possible as a discipline in the first place. But more than that, he's the head of the body, the church. He's the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, from so that in everything he might have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all of his fullness dwell in Jesus, in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. We know who created it. We know who holds it together, because that one has come to us as one of us to tell us. To tell us what he is like, to show us what he is like, that he is all powerful over all, and yet is for us by giving his life for us on the cross. And so science is not a real blocker to Christianity. Not if you investigate, not if you dive deeper. Science is not incompatible with Christianity at all. The Christian can happily be a scientist to look at the order around us. It's just that the Christian concludes, isn't God wonderful? Instead of saying, this is all there is. And science hasn't done away with God. Science is not God's undertaker. For as the latest discoveries, as we go deeper and deeper into the origins of life, they all point beyond themselves to some sort of intelligence, some sort of designer that must have been there. Now, the Christian is happily able to live with science and say, you know what, the heavens declare the glory of God, and so do the very cells, the very basic building blocks of human life. And so all glory be to the one who is our creator and our redeemer. Let me pray. Gracious Heavenly Father, we thank you that you are the creator and the sustainer of all that we see around us. We thank you for the incredible beauty that blows our minds. We thank you for the wonderful complexity. We thank you for all of the fine tuning of both the universe and of our body, without which human life would not be possible. We thank you that you've revealed yourself as one of us, without which real knowledge of you would not be possible. Father, for those who are struggling in this area, I pray that you reveal yourself through your truth and by your spirit to see that science and Christianity are not incompatible at all. For those of us engaged with conversations with friends and neighbors and work colleagues, will you help us to be able to show that they're not incompatible at all, and so point to the wonderful truth that is in Jesus, the creator and the Redeemer. We ask you, help us with this through Jesus' name. Amen.